So the project as a whole, as I mentioned at the beginning of the week, is primarily based around a philological approach to studying the history of Hatha Yoga. And then the sort of secondary methodology we're employing is through ethnographic fieldwork of practitioners of Hatha Yoga in India today. And so three of us are primarily working on text, and Gupta as well in Pondicherry. And then we have Daniela, who has everyone met Daniela Bevilacqua here, Dr. Bevilacqua? She's the team ethnographer. So she'll be giving us a report on her remarkable progress so far in all the Hatha yogis that she's met in India and the interesting information she's found from them. So there are 10 texts that we're proposing to edit as part of the project. Now these range, the two texts that we've discussed in the workshop so far are the oldest and the youngest of the 10. So there's the Amrita Siddhi and the Hatabhyasa Paddhati. So we've been discussing them. There are 8 others. Now they are all to be edited from manuscript sources, of course. And we've, even before the project started, we've acquired a good, healthy number of manuscripts for just about all the texts. I mean, some of them are only available. So the Hatabhyasa Paddhati, for example, there's only one manuscript. But most of the others, there's rather more than that. But we already, as I say, we had plenty to get going with. So I think so far in the year that's passed, we haven't actually yet acquired any more scans of manuscripts. That's the big push on that is going to be going over the next year, but we've had plenty to work on. We've been editing away, and in fact, to summarise what we've been up to so far, there's been remarkable output so far. We've been acquiring a lot of data through the ethnography, collating a lot of manuscripts that we already have, doing a lot of editing. There's been a lot of work on Skype, and also we've been meeting here to go through texts. Gupta's been transcribing away as well in Pondicherry. He's been extremely helpful there. I can't remember how many manuscripts now you've transcribed, but it's probably in double figures by now. And so we have working editions of more than half of the texts, I think. The Amrita Siddhi with Peter. We've been meeting with Peter in Oxford over the year to go through manuscript C. We've finished through that. We've finished collating the readings of that manuscript. I've also collated 3 or 4 of the other later witnesses. There remain, I think, 3 or 4 of the Nepalese witnesses to collate, although they're sort of, you know, it's one of those diminishing return situations, actually, because they all seem fairly closely related. And but we will, you know, we'll see that through. I've put together a working translation, so that's already in pretty good state. The Dattatreya Yoga Shastra is probably the one of, together perhaps with the Viveka Martanda, the next oldest of the texts to be edited. And as Alexis knows, we read it through a working edition of that in Oxford. So actually that's already in a pretty good state, and I've got a translation prepared of that. And in fact, until we acquire any more manuscripts, and I think there's only 1 or 2 that we know of, I've also collated all the manuscripts of that. So that too is in pretty good nick. The Hatabhyasa Paddhati we've been through the manuscript. We actually finished that last week, I think, the final bit of that. We've been all the way through that, read it quite closely. So again, we have a working edition. Gupta transcribed the Sritattva Nidhi for us, so we've collated that with the readings of the manuscript we were looking at today. The Viveka Martanda. Now this is interesting. Perhaps I could ask your advice on how to proceed with this. In the Viveka Martanda seems to be the original name of the text that later became better known as the Goraksha Sanghita or Shataka for various different reasons, and became much more popular in that format. And so there's a lot of manuscripts of it as Goraksha Shataka. Some time ago in Baroda, I got hold of a manuscript of the entitled Viveka Martanda and dated, I think it's 1475, I can't remember, we worked out something late 15th century, so very early for one of these Hatha Yoga texts. And It's complete in about 170 verses, and the later Gorakṣa Shataka texts are normally about 200, 210 verses. So the dilemma, and there are hundreds of manuscripts of that in that format. So the dilemma there is what to do about whether, you know, how much to collate the remaining. The easy option is going to be just to edit the text as it's found in this old manuscript, which is not great actually. There's quite a lot of problems with it, quite a lot of corruptions. But we can generally correct most of them from later witnesses entitled Gorakṣa Shataka. And Karla Novotny did edit the Gorakṣa Shataka in 1976 and published an edition, although that was only based on four manuscripts. So part of me is thinking that the easy option would just be to edit that Baroda manuscript as is using her edition, and then, because otherwise, where do we start? You know, we have been acquiring, I think we have 20 or so probably manuscripts of the Gorakṣa Shataka of the later recensions, but this is a decision I haven't made yet about how to proceed with that edition.
I'm full of sympathy for you in this. I faced Tantraloka with its commentary in 12 volumes in the first edition.
Yeah. And you were saying there were lots of.
I don't think I'm going to live long enough to do a full collation of 24 manuscripts.
Right. It's so huge, yes. But you are at the moment going through them, aren't you?
I've decided that it's simply not feasible.
Right.
So I'm afraid what I'm doing is the drowning rat method. You know, I read the text when I think there's a problem. I consult the manuscripts.
Right.
It's not quite. That's a somewhat something of a character. I read.
Yeah. Well, that's that would be. That's a. I mean, that's
selective,
a.
Yeah.
Selective
so
consultation.
There is a problem.
Okay.
Looking at the manuscripts, it's not the ideal way.
No.
But in terms of the quality of result, you know, you're probably going to get a very small improvement for a huge amount of work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
I don't.
The problem.
Yeah.
It depends a little bit on how interested you are in how the text was transmitted in different parts and whether it's undergone a lot. I mean, I think the Tantraloka one is interested in what Abhinavagupta might well have written, primarily. Whereas with this, I don't know whether it's one of those texts where one is a little bit interested in seeing how it might
what happened to it.
It's a pan-Indian, it's distributed everywhere, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
It's changed name at a certain point, and there are things that maybe.
So trying to trace that, no, that's a good point. And in fact, there's this other text which I published a translation of, and which we are editing as part of the project, which is called the Gorakṣa Shataka, and I think is the original Gorakṣa Shataka. And then verses from that get incorporated in the Viveka Martanda as it becomes called Gorakṣa Shataka, and we can sort of trace that. So, yes,
but only a couple of hundred verses.
Yes. So perhaps one should consult as many manuscripts as possible, but without collating them, do you think?
Well, maybe not initially, but I mean, if one sees that there are things that are worth written.
Worth collating, okay.
Worth following up. Yeah. Maybe at least to start with, select ones from different regions and different places. So
yeah.
Get some impression of how much of it shifted.
That seems like good advice.
Another interesting point is that there are not so many manuscripts of the Viveka Martanda, but there are an enormous amount of the Gorakṣa Shataka, so we could sort of in name just stick to collating and working on the Viveka Martanda, and then perhaps look at the Gorakṣa Shataka manuscripts to see what to see if there are important readings or changes in the text that might help explain the history of its transmission. But I think by the 16th or 17th century, there's not much distinction in the two texts, really. And if you were to try to make sense of it, you would really need to look at all the manuscripts.
It might involve cladistics. Is it working now?
Yeah, it's working, but it is not connected.
Okay.
So I might go to the front desk and just ask.
You've been trying to make it work there, but we could try out of that box,
yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah.
Should we try?
Yeah. Previously we
yeah. Will you? Can you try that one? Great.
Yes.
But it looks like it. I mean, the Baroda manuscript is Jaina, or the name of the scribe. Shows it belongs to this Karatara.
Excuse me.
Karatara. Yes.
Is I don't remember. I haven't looked. I'm afraid I haven't looked at the manuscript for a very long time, so I haven't. I can't remember what the.
Yeah,
I've just tried.
There's any significance to that? I mean,
you can imagine.
Actually,
Nicole, we're having trouble getting the screens are not working
yes.
in there.
Is this even with
okay.
the PC?
Yeah, it's all dead. Dead as a doornail. Thanks.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you. That's good advice on how to proceed, and I may get back to you as I discover more from looking at the various witnesses. There's also a short text we're going to edit called the Amaraga Prabodha, which I mentioned yesterday, seems to be very closely related to the Amrita Siddhi. And again, Gupta's transcribed a couple of manuscripts of that, which seems to be only available in South Indian manuscripts.
The Amaraga
Prabodha. Yes, I don't think we have any.
Are you sure there are no Kashmirian manuscripts?
That may be the Amaraga Shasana.
Ah, sorry.
Yes. That's different, which is very interesting. Which I'm sort of wondering. I think we'll be looking
just
at that, but we're not proposing to edit that at the moment.
Yeah,
that seems clearly to come from Kashmir. And then there are other. So the other text, I think Jason and Mark will probably say more later about the Yoga Chintamani and the Hatha Sanketa Chandrika, which they've already been working on. So yes, I'm very happy with the progress we've made with collating and editing so far. Been going a great lick with that. Now, over the next year, we're trying to acquire more manuscripts of the various different texts. And there we are. Oh, brilliant. It's going. Fantastic. So I think for now, that's probably it on describing an overall look at the texts that remain to be worked on, the Yoga Bija, which we do have quite a good number of manuscripts of already, about 20 or
20.
Something. 20. Yeah. And so that's something we haven't really started work on yet. And the Gorakṣa Shataka as well. But we're only aware of two or three. So this is the quite different text from the Viveka Maratanda, and probably the same sort of age, which I translated from a single manuscript several years ago, but now I want to do a proper edition of. But we haven't really done any work on that. We need to acquire more manuscripts, I think, over the next year or so. So on which note? So Jason's going to, when you're off to India in
March.
In March.
End of March.
Going to be there for 9 months. Gupta's there already. He'll be telling us more shortly, but he's going to be starting on his manuscript searches soon. Or he's actually started already. He's been to Mysore, had some difficulty, which he may tell us about. In terms of the acquiring more manuscripts and the philological side of the project, we've also, after a long and lengthy process, we've got Gupta officially on board the team. He was working for us unofficially for quite a while, which has been excellent. He's been doing great stuff. We want to get a research assistant in Jodhpur is the plan. We want to tie the project in some way to the Jodhpur, the Mansingh Pustak Prakash and the Mehrangarh Fort, where there's this very extensive collection of yoga manuscripts because of the Maharaja Mansingh, beginning of the 19th century, who was a Nath devotee, and he had various texts copied and composed and gathered and so forth. And Mark will probably tell us more about that, but we had a bit of trouble trying to set up a person of the caliber that we want there in Jodhpur, because it's a rather nepotistic institution, as one might guess from these sort of places. In fact, Deborah knows a lot more. Deborah's probably had much more experience of Jodhpur than any of us, so she may have some advice there on how to proceed. But actually, Mark, are you going to say a few words about that? So I'll leave that to Mark later on. And similarly, are either of you planning to talk about Varanasi?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'll leave that to you as well. We've been having trouble there as well, trying to. There are a couple of manuscripts which we're very keen to acquire from the Sampurnanand library there. So we've tried various tactics, which I think Mark will fill us in. But we haven't given up yet. But it's proving tricky.
It's more like 30 manuscripts.
Huh?
30 manuscripts.
30 in total. There's one or two we're really desperate,
really,
aren't we?
Good.
Two or three.
So you can have up to 20% of each.
That sort of thing. I think it might be time for spy cameras, actually. That's what we were thinking, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When we were on our last trip.
You can now Raphael's
get
suggestion.
An invasion.
That might help.
Government officials.
So, and then Danielle is going to tell us about her ethnographic fieldwork, which I joined her for briefly in March. We went to this big festival of the Nath Yogis, happens every 12 years actually, which Veronique wrote up so wonderfully, the instalment 12 years previously. So we didn't really need to observe it as ethnographers in detail, because Veronique wrote about it in such detail, but we were there to meet the yogis and quiz them about Hatha Yoga, and that was quite insightful. They were quite impressive, actually. I was pleasantly surprised, but I think Daniela will perhaps tell us more about that. So, I mean, that's a very brief overview of what we're in. And so the products of the outputs of the project, the publications, will be 10 critical editions. Not quite sure how to, I'll talk a bit more about that after Helen's arrived, but you know, some of them are really quite short, so whether we put them together in one big volume and so forth, I haven't decided upon yet. And then there's the four of us are going to, us four are going to produce a monograph each at the end of the project. So we've, yes, you look, yeah, that's eyebrows. One each. I mean, I feel reasonably confident with mine in that I've been working on it for about 10 years. You know, something I promised was coming out shortly about 10 years ago. So I have got quite a lot. And also what I've been urging everyone to do, what I'm certainly doing, is that the articles that we're producing as the project proceeds are, in my case, all steered to, you know, they're all going to be parts of the monograph. So it's sort of, okay, I may be repeating myself in publication, but it should make it easier then to put the monograph together at the end of the project. So for example, I think I will, talking about the Amrita Siddhi, the three mudras in that are going to be central to my description of early Hatha Yoga, in which the mudras are the key practice. So if I'm thinking I'll probably write an article on that, which will then feed into the monograph and so forth. So we've been kind of galloping ahead, I feel. We've been, everyone's been working very hard, producing lots of great material. I had an interesting chat with Hans, on Monday when he was here, because he's part of this Beyond Boundaries project, which is another big ERC project. And he was saying, you know, be careful, the first year and a half is great. And then sort of reality bites and you start thinking about, you know, how are you actually going to make this work and so forth. But I feel that we can be a bit more confident about how we're, I mean, I feel that our project is a lot more coherent, well-defined, sort of homogenous. We all know what we're all on the same page, we're all doing the same thing. Their synergy project is this huge nebulous thing, and no one quite knows what anyone else is doing, and one of them's disappeared off to America, and you know, it's all beginning to look a little bit fractured, apparently, according to Hans. And so he told me to watch out for that. I think we're okay. No one's. I don't think anyone's looking around for another job yet or anything like that. We're all going to be based at SOAS. We're all on the same page, as they say. And I think so I'm reasonably confident there that that within a year or two we will be just steadily have progressed further towards the aims, the outputs at the end of the project. I'm conscious I don't want to talk for too long, and I also want to just quickly say, just to liven things up, but a slight break from me just holding forth non-stop, just to talk about a specific aspect of the work that I've been doing recently. So, and then I'll hand over to Mark, who's going to speak next. So, after, you know, this wonderful breakthrough with studying the Amrita Siddhi with Peter and coming to the conclusion that it was a Buddhist, composed in a Buddhist milieu, that then, you know, ignited my interest in trying to understand the connections between Buddhists and Nath. So when Daniela and I were traveling in South India in March, we spent a month driving around to various sites, and that was kind of one of the main aims of that trip, is to look into material evidence for these connections. And we had a few leads, in fact, thanks to Veronique's book on the article and on the Kadri Mutt and her book, Itinérance Monastique. That was a sort of first lead. So here, this is why I put this picture up. This is of the locator dated to 968 CE on the bottom of the pedestal at the Kadri Mutt in Mangalore. And I'm just going to quickly take you through this just to show you, and I'm going to be speaking about this at a conference next week. In fact, and also I had some emails back and forth with Alexis, who very kindly helped me out with a passage from the Shatsahasra Sanghita, in which there's a section, a chapter about the Buddhist monk Vajrabodhi, I think it was, teaching the doctrine, the Dharma, to eight Naths and so forth. So I've been looking at these. In these early Kubjikar texts, there seem to be a few mentions of this, and often there are also references to the Konkan. So this is why, this is the kind of, and also building on Peter's work, he points out that as early as the, or suggests, it doesn't seem to be conclusive, but the 8th or 9th century, there's evidence for these Buddhist Vajrayana tradition at Kadri, perhaps. So building on that.
The date of that thing, 968, I recently had a look at the inscription, and I think it's wrong.
Oh.
I mean, I think it's 100 years later.
Oh, because that's what it was first said. I think it was someone called Pai said that it was 1068.
That I have no idea of, but I mean, John Guy wrote to me about it and showed me the passage and sort of pored over it, and it seemed like the digit that's been interpreted as a zero in the Kali era date is probably not the zero.
Ah, very interesting, because that, funnily enough, that was... And he said 1068, didn't he? And then it was revised to 968. Well, that would be very interesting to...
Well, I'm trying to find the passage for you. I think it may be a Buddha Sankhya, I just can't quite remember. But anyway,
yes.
the figure that corresponds to the 100 looks like it's one out.
Okay.
And then it should be 1068 and not 968.
Mm. Okay, well, thank you.
It's very difficult to judge, but...
Otherwise, this would be particularly early, wouldn't it, for such a bronze? Yeah. Okay, and it's interesting the fact that the inscription is in Grunta as well, isn't it? That it's there in the Tulu region. You know, there's no other Grunta inscriptions in that region. But I better keep moving. But yes, thank you. That'd be great to find out more about that. And then I just want to point out, you know, I'd read about this. There's one person's written an article. I'm sure Veronique mentions it in her book. But then, in the Mangalore Museum, there's this early Matsyena. I don't know why it's dated to the 10th century, that seems rather too early. But the interesting point about it is that, unlike any other sort of Shaiva Nath saints, in his Jata Mukuta he has this sort of Dhyani Buddha symbol, something like in the top. So just like here in the Lokeshwara, as one would expect, but we wouldn't expect it in a Nath.
The evidence for its being Matsyendra Nath is?
He's sitting on a fish. Is pretty good evidence, I think. And then if we look in the...
Yeah, you mouth on the left.
You can see the fish's mouth. And then actually in the mutter, so this... And my work on Mughal miniatures as well, looking at the Nath's whistles, we see how they change. And this is the one that's in the mutter now. I don't know if you can see quite close, but the whistle then becomes what they're more like today. But otherwise it's rather similar.
Yeah.
And he... Yes, exactly, the Singyo Sringanada. Yeah. And so he's also sitting on a fish. So this is some
this
sort
is
of...
This thing for supporting the arm. And
yes, this club thing, this, which I wonder is, you know, it's like a laguda or something, if there's any... Or is a laguda only used as a
next
weapon?
Do you remember what's the word called Bhavana Purushottama?
Yes.
There's a description of such an ascetic, and there's a word for something which supports the arm in meditation. Mm.
Oh.
Danda. Yoga Danda.
Is that what it's called?
There are lots of words in Hindi as well, aren't there?
That's the Hindi.
I forget what the Sanskrit term was now. It's a long time ago.
Okay. I'll have a look.
It seemed to be this. Is that really a club or is he... Mm. Maybe it's a club.
He has it in both. There it's rather more ornate, isn't it? Mm. But actually we see quite a lot similar in quite a lot of depictions from Hampi and Vijay and Sri Shailam as well. Anyway, but I must keep moving. And then we also are going to whiz through this. We also went to this place called Panhale Kaji, which is wonderful. Again, evidence of transmission from being a Buddhist site. Very old, the oldest bits of 2nd or 3rd century. And then it seems to become Vajrayana, because we have this Achala and then in other cases, 30 Ks, that's a wonderful site, amazing place, and no, it seemed like no one had been there for 30 years since Deshpande wrote a monograph about it. And then we have, here we see Matsyendra again on the right, overhearing the transmission of the Kaula doctrine. So this is all in the same site, so this seems to be a bit more evidence from the Konkan of the progression from...
With the Yoga
Bandha. With the Yoga Patta, exactly, yeah. And then, right, and then the last bit I'll talk about. So this is this gate at Dabhoi, which is just east of Baroda, the northern gate, which doesn't seem to have been documented at all. There's one article in... You're right. The one article by someone called Shah, but I from reading that, it seemed that he'd never even been there. He was working from ASI photographs. And he only talks about the lowest register in there, where we have 12 knots. So if you see here, there's three different registers of rather amazing. It's dated to, he dates it very convincingly, I think, to between certainly first half of the 13th century and probably 1220 to 1230, sponsored by these two quite well-known Jain brothers who were ministers, Tejapala and Vastupala. So we have Nat Siddhas along the bottom row, and then it seems like Yoginis or Mataras, and then these, I think it's Bhairavas with consorts, and I've got a bit more detail here. So there again is Matsyendra Nat, you can tell by the fish behind. And that's Chaurangi Nat because of his hands. Mm. His hands were cut off in the legend. And that's Gorakshanatha because of the cows. And then on the next register we have these Mataras, is it? This would be Brahmani, I think. Is it Brahmani? Brahmani. And I'm not sure who this one is, but rather that's dramatic.
Isn't that a Mayura?
Kalmari.
That's Kalmari, is it? Sort of
face. The face is very strange.
Yes, it's a sort of bird face.
Bird head.
Yeah. On a duck or something.
Yeah.
Mm. With a pigeon on there. Is it? But this is amazing, this site, and I really think it needs better investigation. And then for us, we went there slightly on a whim because it was mentioned in... So Shah's article was mentioned in Deshpande's book and it was on our route. So we thought, well, let's go and have a look. Apparently there's these early Nat figures, and these are as sort of as early as any that I know of depicting Nat Siddhas. But then Daniela noticed up... Oh, so here's one of the Vairavas. So there are eight of these, and they're rather fantastic. Mm-hmm. But we... As you could see from the beginning, right, we were only there for an hour or two, and we were just taking photographs, pointing up. So immediately, we didn't have long, but we were very keen to go back, in particular because then Daniela noticed along the top, we have all these yogis in complex sort of Hatha yoga postures. And this makes it by about 300 years, the oldest such depictions that we know of, because we'd also been to Hampi, Sringeri, where we knew there were such depictions from the early 16th century. And I wonder if this ties in also with Hemachandra's Yoga Shastra, which in particular in the commentary, which is from, it would be just a little bit earlier than this, is the first, that I know of, the first kind of extensive discussion and explanation of Hatha Yogic postures. Even though he doesn't call it Hatha Yoga, he mentions these various different headstands and inverted, I think we have another one here. I haven't got them all, but inverted. Lotus position and so forth. So that's another thing we're planning either in January or February, hopefully perhaps with the help of Deborah's husband, Neil Greentree, who's a photographer at the Smithsonian, to try to go back and get some good images of these. And we have to stop the traffic and, I don't know, get ladders or scaffolding or drones or that. We're not quite sure how to go about it, but I expect Neil will have a good idea. Perhaps with a view to having a small exhibition here, a small photographic exhibition at SOAS as well, because we got lots of great images of yogis at Hampi and Sringeri, and Danielle is going to go to Sri Shailam as well, and we'll have a sort of comprehensive account of early depictions of Hatha Yoga. I'll stop. I could go on for ages, but I'm conscious that we'll run out of time. Thanks.